Back here, hour two of the game. Cole Mamek's going to talk with us in just a moment. He wanted to offer up his thoughts on Cincinnati. He's watched a lot of the Bearcats this year. In hour one, we had Dan Hoare, the play-by-play voice of the Bearcats, on with us. If you missed any of that, newsradiokman.com in the on-demand tab to check that out. We'll go around college basketball at 5:25 to recap what's happened already in March Madness and what is coming up tonight. K-State obviously playing tomorrow evening. And speaking of K-State, a blast from the Wildcats past at 5:40. Marcus Foster was asked today about his time at Kansas State, as was Dana Altman, because both of those teams, Oregon and Creighton, are in Sacramento as well, with K-State in the same pod. You can't be serious. We'll finish off the show. You can tweet your questions or comments to the game KMAN, as always, if you have them, or we could take some phone calls later on in the hour as well. We've got Cole Mamek on the line with us, and Cole, did you see, I have to start with this. I know it's like, this is probably exactly what I should not do because no one cares about this right now. It's all March Madness. Did you see the article from 24/7 Sports about Brent Venables?
I have not seen it.
Travis Haney wrote an article about Brent Venables, and here's, let me read you this. It's just a graph thrown in at the end that snuck into the end of the article. Here you go. In other words, it's going to take something uniquely special to pry away Venables. Those close to Venables say that he's even slow to show interest in eventually replacing Snyder at Kansas State because of how difficult it would be following the coach he calls, quote, the Bear Bryant of Kansas State. Your immediate reaction?
So wrong.
He's going to hang up. He's going to hang up. You're going to get him to hang up on you. We're going to have to talk to Brody for this segment.
Completely inaccurate article. I mean, jeez.
Fake news.
No, and no Brody today, guys. So
hey.
Just me.
So you think we should read into that, or you think you just brush it off?
I'd brush it off, honestly. I've talked to people that are pretty close to Venables. I think he would certainly take the K-State job if offered, but I mean, ultimately, I honestly think it'll probably be Jim Levitt, and that's the route that they'll go.
Okay, well, fair enough. I understand that. That seems like what a lot of people think at this point in time. But that did just kind of pop on my radar when I was perusing the internet here during a break. And I was like, well, how perfect. We have Cole coming on right as I'm reading this.
Well, I'm going to mean tweet Travis Haney later, so.
Okay.
For that.
Good. You can be pretty feisty on Twitter.
He can or me?
You can.
Well, yeah, I'm maybe trying to tone that down a little bit, so maybe I shouldn't.
No, I fully endorse it. I would enjoy that. K-State beats Wake Forest. It was a game that displayed just how bad Wake is defensively, but K-State certainly took advantage. They closed very well. How impressed were you by the Wake win, and how much should we read into it?
That was a really good win. And, you know, when you look at the offense and the way that they played in that game, I mean, 66% from the floor, the best shooting percentage since 1997 by a K-State team. The way that they attacked, I really liked it because they didn't adhere to try and play their own style. They kind of adapted to the way Wake Forest likes to play. And, you know, they uncovered some holes in the Wake Forest defense by pushing the ball out in transition. I thought K-State got out and ran, took some early shots, and took what Wake Forest gave them. They didn't try to run clock too much. You know, they looked to continue to score even when they had the lead late in the game. And so I thought that was really encouraging. Honestly, a bit surprising. I know Wake Forest is terrible on the defensive end. They're 283rd in the country in defensive efficiency. But K-State hadn't scored 80 points in regulation in their last 15 games going into that. And then they hit the 95-point mark. So really an encouraging performance. And when you look at it, I mean, four of K-State's last five halves of basketball going into that game, they'd scored under the 27-point mark in those halves. And so, you know, just a really good performance from your seniors, really everyone. I mean, when you shoot 66%, everyone was shooting the ball well. But really, DJ Johnson, Wesley Awandu, Corby Irvin, and then obviously Kamau Stokes hit some really big shots for K-State, although I thought he struggled distributing the ball some in that game. He did step up in the second half.
Cole, just comparing where K-State is at now to where they were 16 or 17 days ago, how surprised are you that they have been able to put together this run?
I'm shocked. I mean, honestly, I mean, you guys heard me say this on the air before the TCU game, a couple days before that I didn't think there was any way Bruce Weber would be back, because I didn't think they could right the ship at that point. And then they win the TCU game. They beat Tech, beat Baylor in the Big 12 tourney, should have beat West Virginia, and, you know, look what they did to Wake Forest. And so you're certainly encouraged with the momentum that they've built. And I kind of feel like they've built this us-against-the-world mentality and that's what's really got them going. They've got that motivation. They're playing with a chip on their shoulder. It's too bad they didn't play that way earlier in the year, because if they had, they wouldn't have been in this situation where they were in the first four in Dayton. But they are definitely playing with that us-against-the-world mentality, and I think that's helped them. And you can tell, they, the seniors, they recognize it's, you know, any game now could be their last game of their career, and they're stepping up and playing well. And, yeah, I think, you know, Tyler, you had that column on Powercat Game Day last night, and I think I agree with you. I mean, I think Bruce Weber will now be back if he so chooses, despite what happens against Cincinnati.
Well, and speaking of Cincinnati, Cole Manbeck talking with us. I know you've watched them quite a bit this year, and the thing that stood out to me from what you told me about them, basically, is just that they remind you of a Frank Martin type of team.
Yeah, and, you know, they do every year. I've watched a ton of Cincinnati basketball this year. I watched all three of their games against SMU. I've watched them play UConn multiple games. I watched them play at Iowa State, which they actually won in Ames, so that's certainly an accomplishment. They won an ugly game up there in the non-conference part of the season. They're just a physical, hard-nosed, tough team, and that's kind of the trademark of Mick Cronin, their head coach. You know, you look at Cronin's history, he was under Bob Huggins at Cincinnati for 5 years, worked under him as an assistant. Then he went to Louisville as an assistant under Rick Pitino. So we're talking about a guy that really understands physical, hard-nosed play and defense. And they play a bit of a matchup zone defense where they kind of pack their big men into the paint, and they don't foul a lot. You know, everyone thinks, you know, when you think about physical hard-nosed defense, these are guys that don't foul. They only average 16 fouls per game, which is the 18th fewest in the country, and they get after it on that end of the floor. I would liken them to a West Virginia in the sense that they're eighth in the country in defensive efficiency, Cincinnati, that is. West Virginia's sixth. They're only giving up 0.89 points per possession on the season, so that's phenomenal. West Virginia's 0.88, and so they're going to come at you hard, and then they're holding teams to 38% from the floor, which is eighth in the country as well. So they get after it on the defensive end, and then they offensive rebound. So that's when I say they kind of remind you of Frank Martin teams. They pound the glass. They rebound 35% of their missed shots, which is top 20 in the country. So they get after it, and they block shots, too, on the defensive end. So that's really where it's going to be. It's going to be a night and day difference from the Wake Forest game, the way these guys defend.
You just answered my question in a way, but I want to kind of ask it a different way here. I was going to ask you what Big 12 team Cincinnati is closest to. And you mentioned West Virginia. I kind of thought that at first glance, but then I saw that, you know, they really only play seven or eight guys deep, which is similar to a K-State or an Iowa State, whereas West Virginia can throw 11 or 12 guys out there. But you still think that the Mountaineers are the closest thing that K-State has faced this year to them?
Well, in terms of physical play, I say physical play because they don't foul a lot. They're smart on the defensive end. But the way they rebound and the way they attack the glass on the offensive end and the way they play defense a bit reminds me of West Virginia. Now, they're not going to press you all game like West Virginia is, but, you know, they get after it on that end of the floor. And when you look at the numbers, you know, one of the key differences that they're not like West Virginia's pace of play. Cincinnati plays one of the slowest tempo games in the country. They're actually very similar to K-State. K-State averages 69 possessions per game, which is 274th in the country. Cincinnati averages almost 67 possessions per game. They're 318th in the country in pace of play. So, you know, if you think of Baylor, Baylor's right around that number as well. They slow the game down and play that slower tempo. So this is a game that's going to be a grinded-out possession-type game where it's going to be hard to get out and run and transition. And the one thing that Cincinnati really has is they have big guards. You know, you look at Jacob Evans, their leading scorer. He's a 6'6" guard who averages 4.5 rebounds per game as well. And Troy Copain's a 6'4" point guard, 4-year starter for him. He's averaging 4.5 rebounds a game as well. And the other thing that they do well, they don't turn it over. And so they only average 10 turnovers a game, which is the sixth fewest in the entire country. Copain is fourth in the country in assist-to-turnover ratio. Monte Morris is number one, obviously. But, you know, they take care of the basketball. And so K-State, a team that really does like to turn you over, they've been successful at it, is certainly going to have a hard time doing that.
Cole Manbeck is talking with us. You know, earlier we had the play-by-play voice of Cincinnati on, and he didn't really seem to agree with me that having to take on a play-in winner is a disadvantage here for Cincinnati. But I just think, I mean, for being a sixth seed, a team that won 29 games, a lot of people had them projected as a five. They perhaps got underseeded a little bit. Then they get shipped 2,000 miles west. On top of that, they have to play a play-in game winner, and K-State is not even having to do the Tuesday-Thursday turnaround. You have the extra day to go Tuesday, Friday. How big of a deal is that, and do you feel like that does give K-State a big advantage?
I think it's advantageous to K-State because you've got guys that haven't played in the NCAA tournament before on this team. Cincinnati, you know, most of their guys have been there, done that. But K-State's now kind of got that pressure out of the way where they've already got a win under their belt. You know, they've hit shots. Some of the freshmen have now played in a game, Maurice, Xavier Sneed. I mean, you look at Barry Brown, Kamau Stokes, Dean Wade. None of those guys have been in an NCAA tournament game before. So now they've got that first one under their belt, and it does kind of take the pressure off. You know, we heard people still saying, you know, if they lose that game against Wake, would Bruce Weber still be fired? You know, it's certainly a possibility. And so now you've won that game. I think K-State can play more loosely. Certainly helps. And especially with the travel that you mentioned, the fact that K-State now has that extra day built into their schedule to fly out there and get prepared and have that extra day of film study and get prepped for Cincinnati, I think that's certainly a big advantage for K-State. So, yeah, I would disagree with that notion for sure.
Just hope it's not a 1-3-1 zone that gets thrown out, right?
Well, they, like I said, they will play a little bit of matchup zone. It's a little bit of a different defense that Cincinnati will throw at you. But look, the one thing I will say that is in K-State's favor is you look at the schedule strength. You know, we talk about Cincinnati. They're 29-5. Yeah, they know how to win games, but they play in the American Conference. They haven't played near the competition that K-State's played. If you go off KenPom.com, who I think is fantastic, you know, K-State has played 12 games against the top 25 in the KenPom rankings. Cincinnati's played 4 on the entire season. And so K-State certainly faced a lot tougher competition. A Cincinnati team that just played SMU in the American Championship, and they could not have looked worse on Sunday. So, you know, I think an opportunity is certainly there. I think it's a game that K-State's going to win. But there's a reason K-State's only 3.5-point underdogs. This is certainly an opportunity for them to advance.
Wait. So did you just – I don't know if you listened to the Ballers and Haters segment that I did on Tuesday. Did you just assert yourself as a baller by picking K-State to win?
I did not hear the segment, but if that's what the premise is, then I am a baller, which I am in real life.
Cole, you didn't miss anything.
That would certainly make sense. I am picking Kansas State to win this game in advance. I think if they can get over the 65-point mark in this one, I think it's a game they win. It's not going to be pretty, but I like K-State to be the 11 over the 6 and advance on.
Cole, you just found your way into the Haters and Ballers segment tomorrow, my friend. We'll have to bring that back up. I'm telling you, it's good stuff. I got more text messages about that segment than about any that I've done in a long time. So I was proud of myself. Just let me have my moment in the sun, okay?
Yeah, sure.
I will go back to the on-demand tab, and I will listen to the podcast tonight.
There we go. Thank you very much, Cole. That's why we bring you on the show. Enjoy the rest of the tournament action today, and I'm sure I'll be talking and texting with you soon, man.
Yep, we sure will. Thanks, guys.
All right, there's Cole Manbeck here on the show. Just got to find ways to bring me down about the Haters and Ballers.
Yeah, no. I think that's fine. It's just I'm bummed because since we got into that, I wasn't able to get in my last question, which I thought was a pretty good question.
Oh, sorry.
Cole. It's okay.
That was a little radio miscommunication.
I pointed at you because
of Cole's stat, and I was like, you were right about how much more battle-tested K-State has been to this point of the year. Just a little.
It's okay.
It happens.
I forgive you.
It happens. That's we just took you a peek behind the curtain. 540. What Marcus Foster had to say, he's in Sacramento with Creighton, as is K-State. So the reporters from Manhattan were asking him about his time at K-State. Does he hold any grudge against Bruce Weber? He had a pretty good answer to that. But coming up next, the best of day one of the tourney in around college basketball.